Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath.
This is Barry Wheeler, Consultant here at BrightPath.
And we're going to do something a little different today. We're going to, to frame this up, Bray is essentially going to interview me about making the case to leadership, a topic that we've explored elsewhere, but we haven't really talked about too much here on the podcast. And we've had this idea for this episode sitting around in the hopper for quite some time, over a year. But it really comes from my experience, you know, growing into being a senior leader at my previous employer and getting to that place where I was the subject matter expert and the leader of the team and having to go to leadership and often going to business leadership above my direct boss in order to make the case for things we wanted to do. And in the process, obtaining everything from budgets, you know, expense and travel and resources to headcount to capital dollars for software or for facilities and emergency operations centers and that kind of thing. So I don't know the questions. Bray's got several written here that I can see. And we're just going to have an open conversation around these. I'll attempt to answer, and I'm sure Bray will have some color commentary along the way.
Let's do it. So I just have kind of some basic questions, and then they're a little bit open-ended and kind of let you riff, and I can ask some follow-ups here. But really in terms of making the case to leadership, how is that something that, you know, just at the start here, how do you prepare yourself for that? You've been asked to go present on X topic. You know, does it make a difference in terms of what the topic is in how you prepare? But just generally kind of how are you thinking about it? How are you preparing to go have that conversation, that presentation?
So I think the context matters a little bit. I mean, certainly at our last employer where we worked together prior to BrightPath, there were formal processes of presenting to leadership about things. Like there was a capital expenditure committee that if you were going to ask for money over X dollars out of capital, even though your budget had already been approved, you had to go in and present the request, and they were very formal. They had to be in a certain format. They were originally on big display boards, and then they eventually went to PowerPoint. But you literally had like 3 minutes typically to make this case. Now, what that meant was the real meeting were the meetings before the meeting with all the members of the expenditure committee to make sure that they'd had a chance to weigh in. So you kind of timeline this stuff out 30, 60, 45 days to get there. So setting the formal thing aside, the real decisions were made in small group meetings or one-on-one meetings, or like it would be my boss and I, but it was my meeting. Like he was there, right. He or she was there to deal with certain things, but like it was my presentation to that senior leader. And I always kind of thought of this, I learned this from Rob Borsch, who I worked for several years. I tried to figure out like what was the catchy narrative that went along with whatever it was that I was about to do.
The thing that would stick with them?
The thing that would stick with them, right? So, you know, one of the projects I led in my former life was this just massive, and I mean massive, retrofit of video surveillance equipment from VCRs in the original DVR stage. I'm not kidding. VCRs in some stages to IP-based video that used, you know, COTS parts, commercial off-the-shelf systems cobbled together, so to speak, into this video surveillance system. And we definitely had to have a narrative that went along with that because this was a big spend. This was board level spend to get the project approved and then the year over year spend. And so we really spent a lot of time thinking about like, what's the narrative that we want to tell around this? And how do we do our due diligence around cost? Like, what are the questions that we were trying to anticipate the questions we were going to get.
Sure.
And how do we make sure we had good logical detail around how we were going to deal with those questions? Like, there were always questions about the business case. There were always questions about why did you pick these stores versus all stores? And we had to deal with, in some cases, you know, in a corporate leadership team, an executive team that reports to the CEO, there's usually a pretty good divergence of opinions on not necessarily the vision, but about how to do things
mm-hmm.
and how do you get there. And in some cases, we had folks who were like, well, you should just retrofit everything to the new system. We were like, yeah, I mean, but you're not going to give us $450 million or right. whatever. I mean, it was some absurd amount of money. But like, here's the logic we got to this. And, you know, tried to present the material in a way that you got questions that you expected versus like, well, I don't understand why you picked these stores versus these stores.
Right.
We could answer that by explaining the methodology. But like, if somebody started nitpicking, I mean, that would be bad. You're off the topic of like, I need the money
right.
to do this.
Right.
Here's the business case. I think the other thing related to this that's important to consider is it's rare to have a profit generating project out of a support function like corporate security, which was our team, global security at the time. It's hard to bring a project forward that says, hey, we're going to make money on this. So you really had to think about the qualitative business case of and make sure that those things were tied to the company's strategic objectives, like keeping people safe and having a retail environment where women were comfortable shopping at night were core parts of what our mission was
mm-hmm.
because it tied directly to the guest base, the customer base of the company. So we could emphasize those things because we knew that they would resonate, as opposed to don't look over here where this project loses $40 million in net present value because it doesn't generate any cash flow,
right?
It's just a spend. So that's a pretty broad answer to your question, but that's what we went after. Like, what's the narrative? What questions do we think we're going to get? How do we make sure we've addressed or crafted material to head off those questions or address those questions head on? What was the business case, quantitative and qualitative?
So kind of around that, kind of drilling into those components of that. So what would you say, what's the most effective elements kind of within that? So taking like the narrative itself, kind of as you're laying it out, what are those kind of like key pieces in that narrative portion or the key moments of your presentation? Kind of what do you typically default to as you're kind of setting it up or you're making the case?
I mean, I tried to craft the narrative in a way that it was as freaking obvious as possible that we needed to do this thing. And if that meant we had to have, sometimes we had data that backed up the position, sometimes we didn't. I really aimed to have like, what's the interesting narrative to address here? That narrative needs to connect to the company's strategic objectives. And then that we made the case just in a very strong manner to get us the things that we needed. I think, for example, I was trying to think of public facing things I could talk about. For example, one of the things that at our former employer that rolled out about, well, more than 10 years ago now, were vehicles for parking lot patrol. I think it was initially Segways and then later the T3 Motion vehicles. And you can go, I mean, I'm not telling you anything trade secret here. They're out there, right? There was press when the company did it. And the Segway project was actually got a lot of criticism at first because people were like, well, you're just buying some toys. Yeah, we're not. Like, look at the data. Let me show you the data behind this, because honestly, I didn't believe it at first that this was going to work. It was another one of my boss's crazy ideas that had come up, but you know what? It did work.
Right.
So here's the structured analysis that we did, and here's the drop in parking lot crime that occurred because of this. Now, the narrative was about, here's the issue with parking lot crime. Here's the perception of customers based upon survey from a team. There was a research team that did that thing, kind of thing. Here's what our customers tell us is important to them. Safety was like the number two thing on choosing where to shop. Here's what we're going to do to drive down the parking lot crime rate. Because like essentially there wasn't crime that occurred in the stores. This crime was occurring in the parking lots. And so here's how we were going to address this. And look, we piloted this in 40 some stores and here's the results we had, which the results were awesome. And actually after the first year, our results in the actual deployment were better than our pilot. So it kind of, I mean, it led them to a place that just, it was obvious that we should do this. The other thing too is I would say just where it's possible, just take advantage of the fact if you're working on something cool that you find some cool ways to share that. Honestly, part of what sold this, we took the executives for a Segway ride.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we took them on a, we brought the Segway up to one of the floors where the execs were at and we let them ride it around. So here's the CEO riding a Segway going, that's like the coolest thing I've ever done. Great. I'm about to ask you for $1 million for to buy
more,
you know, more or whatever. I don't remember what the numbers were. So I will, you know, look for ways to do that.
Almost make it interactive.
Make it interactive. Make it fun. If you can. But again, you got to tailor this to your,
the audience,
right? Some folks are not into that kind of thing.
So in terms of, so say you talked a little bit about kind of the pre-meetings, but then going into kind of the official meeting, or say the case you're making doesn't allow for kind of the pre-meetings. How do you condense, or what are the kind of the steps in terms of kind of taking that allotted time that you have? Say you have 3 minutes to make your case. What are you kind of shooting for in that 3 minutes? I know we're kind of sitting around kind of that narrative and the scripting of how you're making that case, but that becomes a factor for folks in terms of, oh, I have this really great story to tell. I can't possibly tell you that in 3 minutes. Like,
yeah,
how do you get it down to that 3 minutes, the 5 minutes, whatever it is?
One of my former mentors who still works in the field at a different organization told me once that when you're talking to folks at this level, there's just three things to remember: be good, be brief, be gone. So 3 to 5 minutes, I think, to ask for capital of pretty much any amount is what I recall from my time there. There's a little bit of formality at the beginning. We're requesting blah, 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 blah for whatever, fully funded within our capital budget. And then I would just switch to the narrative. My narrative is I'm going to spend about a minute, 45 to 60 seconds on the narrative. Like, I've got a story to tell. I want to paint a vision or paint the problem very clearly. Here's the solution. Here's what we've seen from the test or the pilot, or here's what it's going to look like, or whatever the answer is to that. And then here's the benefits. And of course, they're going to have a financial analysis in front of them, which might paint an ugly picture. Walk through that briefly, or in some cases, finance came with us and they addressed the finance questions, like on our big stuff.
Sure.
Usually brought the analyst along. That was better than me trying to explain, why is the cash flow low? Well, I don't know. I'm not.
Here, let the money guy talk money.
This is before I went to business school. So right. I was a little better at this after getting through accounting and finance classes at the grad level. And then just the wrap up. And then I was trying to just in early and have questions. And there were almost always questions.
What kind of questions did you typically see? Like what were kind of the most frequent flyer, and then what was kind of the craziest questions?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there were some clarifying questions, like, so this is for 300 stores. Yes. And yes, and the 300 stores are on page 4 of this tab, or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
There was always a list of stores that were impact or other facilities. Yeah, like, I mean, sometimes they would ask if so-and-so had seen this, like, have you worked through... Yes. And, you know, have you done this? Yes. And like, it was I led the design team for a while, and we did a lot of stuff with folks that built and designed, the architects, right? And the planners. And well, they're in the room because most of what goes on here was new store approval and remodel approval. And when they would see, like, have you spoken with, or what does the planning team say? Well, I would just turn to him because they're in the room. Like, you're the SVP for architecture. And he would, I mean, clearly, if he supported it, it's why we were there. If he didn't, we never would have made it this far.
Right.
So yeah, he would get up and
well, have an opinion.
Blah, 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 blah. You know, like a good example was security cameras on the outside of stores, right? This company was very particular about prototype and the look and feel of a facility. And that was one of the things that the architecture and planning SVP asked me to fix when I came into that role 13 years ago. It's like, I don't like, we build these beautiful buildings and then you hang these damn cameras on there. So we found a way to do this better. Right. And then we took it forward to, you know, blop for retrofits or whatever. That question came up and I just gave it to him, and he goes, and he's like, well, yeah, I mean, architecturally we didn't like it. And so we've worked with the corporate security team to come up with a better solution, and this is it. And we fully support it. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Right.
I have seen, I mean, unfortunately, you know, feedback at that level, it's just very direct. Sometimes we took things in there and we had to bring them back because they didn't somebody didn't like something and they don't like to have conflict amongst each other in the room. So that was usually the conflict with financial related. So we'd have to go back and then go back to the CFO. And mind you, we'd done that once.
Sure.
Right. But we'd always come out with a better effort, I think, at the end, because the questions were almost always like, they were pretty valid about what to do. This never happened to me, but I was witness to a number of individuals who just got destroyed in there. I would say because they either didn't anticipate the questions that they were going to get and therefore didn't have very good answers, or at least didn't anticipate some of the themes of the questioning. And then just sometimes stuff comes in that's just not a bad idea. It's just a bad idea.
Right.
And it doesn't fit with the corporate objectives, but somehow it gets up to the, we're going to go to this meeting and just get, it was ugly. My biggest effort that I ever took in there, the person in front of us, because you're in the room for the two presentations in front of you. So like on deck and, or, you know, the next at bat circle and the person on deck or whatever. And you'd watch the two in front of you and the person in front of us just got pummeled over something. And it was a bad idea. And I'm not sure why they got that far, but it got tore up. And then they're like, okay, Brian Strouser, you're up. And I'm like, oh boy.
Oh,
don't hang any curveballs.
Right. Thanks for table setting. Ooh, that was actually my next question here was just around, and you've started to touch on this, but in terms of making the case, what should be avoided? Like what are bad elements? What are bad prep ideas that influence or impact the way that these presentations go? Like were there common factors in there?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple. I mean, one is like what I mentioned earlier, it's don't bring bad ideas forward. You need to have some ways to be able to vet that information. You need to have some ways to vet this information up front with a trusted partner so that you're not taking anything that's just a bad idea that's kind of dumb forward to the group. You can't rely upon, you know, I saw someone once make an argument that we needed to do something because they were professionally certified in the field and this is what we should do. And I was sitting in the room as somebody who also had the same professional certification and thought that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard. So just because, don't make that argument to executives. It will not resonate. You need to do this because I have my certified business continuity professional certification. No, they will not care one iota. To me, those are table stakes to play in this field anyway. It's not.
Right.
That doesn't make you necessarily better than another person that's or have better ideas. So those are things I think you want to avoid. You really have to just be able to get to the point and show that you've done your homework. You understand the issue, that you're putting forward the best possible solution, that you've anticipated these questions about scope, scale, severity, spend. Can you narrow it down? Can you do more? All these things have come up to me in an approval conversation about let's do all stores. Let's do no stores. Let's cut this by half. And then you need to be able to have that discussion, but you also need to know when, you know, you've lost the point and just back off and go somewhere else. I think good practice for this, honestly, is listening to U.S. Supreme Court arguments, because attorneys before the Supreme Court get 15 to 30 minutes to make their case. And they get about a minute into that before the justices just start in.
Right.
Right. And the questions are hard. I think that's good practice for kind of thinking about what you're going to have to do in these conversations.
How that narrative works.
Right.
How do you know? So going back to your kind of the bad idea point, how do you know what's a bad idea, given that if I'm presenting a case to you as leadership and I think this is the greatest thing I've ever thought of, how am I warning myself that it's a bad idea? Like, what are those steps in there that should be taken for sure, kind of practically for folks?
Well, I think this is where you need good feedback partners and you need to make sure that you're working with a good leader that can guide you on these things, serve as a partner who's been down this road before. I think having peers or others that have had to do this and have them give you thoughts and ideas about what has and has not worked for them in these, and that is willing to look at and talk through your idea and give you insight and input on, you know, where should you go with this? I think that's helpful. And it was a mix. I had a mixed bag there. I always had leaders who were very good at this particular topic. My, you know, when I was a manager, my directors were really good at this. When I was a director, my chief security officer and VP was really good at this, although he would never go and do it himself. We always had to go and ask for capital, and that's fine. Sometimes he was in the room, and sometimes he was like, have fun. Let me know how it goes. But I think you need those folks just for your general professional development, but I think those are good folks to bounce things off of to make sure you're not just coming forward with a really dumb idea.
Do you have to go seek out like a really tough critic in some cases, or not always, or not necessarily?
I think you should, I don't know if you necessarily need a tough critic, but I think you need to find somebody that's willing to be honest with you about feedback. And, you know, I had a former boss, that I loved working for, but he was very challenging. And I liked that from the standpoint that he thought I wasn't so good at things I thought I was good at. So it made me better.
Sure.
Right. And he wouldn't shy away from, you know, one of them. And I always went to him for advice when I wasn't working for him anymore. I never really went to him for advice when I was reporting.
Sure.
To him. But I would go to him and, you know, we'd laugh and kind of talk through something. And he'd be like, okay, well, since you asked for my advice, let me be honest with you. And then I would just kind of pucker. And then I think you're wrong. And here's how I think you should think about doing this. So I found that helpful.
Yeah. Kind of last question. If you were giving the advice to somebody walking in the room, if you were being that kind of honest feedback partner, what, I know you've mentioned kind of be good, be quick, be out. What advice would you give somebody walking into that room or setting up that presentation to go forward? Kind of just baseline advice.
Well, one is I would repeat that advice. In this conversation, you need to be good, be brief, be gone. If they're going to ask questions, they're going to ask. Give them some time to process and do so. Second, and again, so, okay, some of this is cultural to your organization too, so take this with the appropriate grain of salt. But if you bring material, the material is an appendix to what you're going to have to say. If the material just reflects what you're saying, there's no need for the meeting, right? You can just give it to them. I hated meetings where somebody handed me something, and if I read that, I knew the whole story, and then there was no point in the conversation happening. And I know that sounds kind of dickish, but I think it's true. If you don't have a lot of time in your day to do stuff, then that's going to come up like that. And then I think you really want to think about how you're going to use the time. If you've got 30 minutes, you should plan on talking for 10 or 15 and get through the one or two big things that you need to get out of that conversation, have a leave behind in order to explain that. Make sure but really think about the material that you're bringing. If it's a widget, bring a picture of the widget or bring the widget for them to play with.
Sure.
Right. And talk through the what and the why and how is this important. And I would think of it in that way. Otherwise, I think we've covered some of the other preparations, right? I mean, think about your narrative and the questions you're going to get and that kind of thing.
So last question, even though I promised
the last question,
does it make a difference in terms of what the topic of the presentation is in terms of how you're setting that up? So we've talked a lot about kind of capital and business expense and kind of making the business case, but what if it's something issue related, incident related, reputationally related, like it's an actual event or incident that's gone on or something that is going on or set to occur? Does it make a difference in terms of how you're kind of teeing up that conversation, or is it really kind of the same principles
mm-hmm.
as making the other case? You just have to, you're customizing that narrative in a different fashion.
I think it does change the conversation a little bit in terms of what becomes important. I had a lot of discussions with senior leaders about things that had happened. It was a lesson that I learned early on is that you should assume they don't know anything about the incident and the context around the incident and the situation around the incident. And so you need to be prepared to share what's pertinent and then let them ask questions about that.
Is that even if they've been included on communication or?
I never trusted anyone else's communication. To be clear, since you worked for me, I trusted people's communication on my team because I knew what the command center was publishing. I didn't trust any other person's conversation because I don't know if they've given them the context that as the crisis leader, I thought they needed to know.
Sure.
So I would want to make sure that they knew and had the context that I thought was important. And you know what? If they know it, they're just going to cut me off and that's fine.
Right.
I can deal with that. I'll set my ego aside and take that for what it is and go on. But I think it's tough to put them in a position where they need to make decisions if they don't have what you think is the strategic context of what's going on. Yeah. A good example of this is, and I think this is the first time that he had done this, but the CEO called me the morning that Hurricane Sandy made landfall. And I was in an offsite leadership meeting and he hadn't gotten the update that he was expecting, which was kind of a miscommunication on our part. But he started asking some questions about Sandy and the impact. And you know what? We didn't know the answer to any of these questions because the thing had just made landfall in the early morning hours and we weren't going to get access to the locations for several more hours, like till after lunchtime or so in Minnesota. So I was just very clear with him about, well, here's where the storm is at and here's kind of the stage we're at and here's when we're going to know something, which is later today. And we may not have a very good picture until tomorrow because there's going to be some areas like, which turned out to be true, New York City, New Jersey, Long Island, where we're probably not going to get access to the stores until tomorrow. And, you know, I think we did an overflight. We had some helo coverage. We had some ideas, but like, you don't know until you get in and right. start looking around. So I think I was just very clear with him about like, here's the context that I think you need to know right now. Here's where that's at. Here's who we're working with. And, you know, you've made it clear that you want to know more. So we'll communicate to you more frequently about what's going on. And you call me anytime. If he had talked to any other leader in the organization, I don't think he would have gotten that context. But because I was the crisis leader, I was able to kind of explain that. So that context in the course of an incident, that's important to know. And I would start off with the assumption that they don't know anything about that.
Is there anything in terms of when we're thinking about the incident that you want? You kind of talked about offering up, kind of call me anytime. Here's the next update. Is there anything else that you always like to leave that leader or leaders with kind of in those conversations as you're making the case, like kind of your final thought or offering off that conversation? Is there anything additional that is important to kind of leave with them?
I think it depends on the context. The closure I always left leaders with on a crisis was, if you have questions that our normal communication isn't answering, please call me or call the command center or call my boss.
Sure.
To get that context, it's important to me that you have a full view of what's going on. But if I was wrapping up a conversation about something that I was asking for, I would probably, wrap that up with an additional ask around, here's, you know, again, I want to reiterate, here's why I think this is the right thing to do. And if you have questions, you know, I'd love the opportunity to answer those or something like that.
Kind of a final summary.
Kind of your final summary, your final ask. I mean, what the sales language is, you're supposed to ask three times for the thing, right? So ask for the sale. It's kind of what I always got to at the end of those.
Well, awesome. Well, those are all the questions I had.
Covered
it.
So I think that was fun, except for the not knowing the questions.
Yeah, and my final three questions.
That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. Tune in next week for another new episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BryghtPath.com.